the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up this week on the Radio Today programme, as Rajar announces a pause, we'll find out what it means for the next Rajar data release and how they could change the process of finding people to survey going forward over the next few months. And we've got more fantastic history in David Lloyd's Radio Moments at the end of the podcast.
Original music for this podcast was composed by McCaslin.
First Radio Today's founder and editor Roy Martin is here, and it's another week where we say goodbye to another radio station. Roy?
Yes, that seems to be the way of it. There's... Yes. There's a few hundred coming in September, but yeah, we've got another one announced, haven't we, by the mighty Bauer. It's Radio Air.
Radio Air. Yeah, this is came a bit of a shock, actually, for a lot of people, I think. So to explain what's going to happen if people haven't heard this, Radio Air in Leeds on FM and DAB at the moment is going to turn into Greatest Hits Radio on 96.3 FM. The DAB slot in Leeds is going to be taken over by Pulse One from Bradford, which is taking the Hits Radio network now. But Radio Air as a brand will no longer exist. And there were three of them only a couple of years ago, Radio Air 1, Radio Air 2, and Radio Air 3.
I know, right? It's crazy. 39 years in Leeds. And Bauer decides it's time to go. I mean, somebody did famously say once, if it was a dog, it would have been put down. I can't remember the name of John Myers' name to mention that particular person, so I won't mention John Myers. But it looks like it's finally turned into a dog.
Yeah, I mean, it has struggled over the years. FM signal was never good on that transmitter. Rajars have been a bit hit and miss. I think there was at one point the AM service, Magic 828, had almost as many listeners. It might have overtaken it slightly at one point as well. Mm. So, yeah, it's had a bit of a troubled history. But its purpose-built building was very interesting when it first opened. It's right next to Yorkshire Television, or ITV Yorkshire now, on the main road into Leeds on Burley Road. And lots of famous names have been through the door over the years as well. People like...
Oh, don't mention people, because we're gonna miss somebody, and then they're gonna tweet us. Oh no, that's already happened.
So, yeah. People like Martin Kellner and James Whale and Peter Levy, who's a big name in Yorkshire, as well as Chris Moyles going and doing some first bits of radio there, and Hursty, Larry and Paul. We're going to get in trouble for the ones we don't mention. But
yeah, you know, exactly.
So many over the years.
I remember listening to Chris Moyles' evening bit, it was called, wasn't it, when he did the evening show on Pulse. I was driving to an RSL in Todmorden. And between my house and Todmorden, there was a little bit of the A646, I think it was, where Pulse blasted in on the Yorkshire-Lancashire border. And it was the evening bit. And that was that. I didn't know anything about Chris at the time. He was just another presenter. And then obviously he went national and became the big star he is today. But I took that name. I called my show The Morning Bit. I nicked his ideas, even back in the mid-90s.
But yeah, so lots of tweets and Facebook comments, things about the demise of Radio Air, which is going to change to Greatest Hits from September. And a lot of those wireless and Celador stations obviously have now only got local breakfast shows and Greatest Hits radio programming at other times. Also Paul Swan, as we should call it, Paul Swan.
And Paul Swan
and Signal One and now just got breakfast shows from Bradford and Stoke, and all the rest of the program is coming from the Hits network now.
It's best if people just read about it. I do realize that rant about Moyles was when he was on Pulse, not Err.
Yeah.
So that was probably irrelevant. So you could probably delete that from the tape.
No, we'll leave it in. We'll leave that in. Okay. That was interesting. and he did, you know, he did start out at Radio Air, of course, in Leeds, his local station, along with Hursty and many others back in the late 80s, early 90s. Some other Bauer news this week. That looked like a big job for Ofcom to sift through all these applications for format changes. The main one is about shifting licenses between regions. So Ofcom has these approved regions, and Bauer said, well, there's a few here on the border, and we want to put those ones into the south, we want to put those ones into the west. And Ofcom have just said yes to it all.
Yeah, so there are over 50 format changes, which now you mention it makes sense for them to just apply to award three community radio stations in Northampton, which we'll come on to in a minute. But yeah, you can see after all that work, they've said, right, sod it. just agree anything that comes in. But yeah, all these format changes, they're little tweaks. I mean, if a station said we're gonna play popular chart music, then they've literally tweaked it to say mainstream music. So all the formats are pretty much the same, apart from a couple of words here and there. Apart from stations like Fire, who's gone older, it's got another 10 years on top of their age group, so they're up to 44-year-olds instead of just 34-year-olds, and they don't have to play dancing specialist music anymore. They can just play mainstream music for Bournemouth, which covers everything, really. It could turn into a jazz station and it would still be applicable. So yeah, just minor tweaks on thousands of formats, all ready, of course, for the rollout of Greatest Hits Radio in September.
And some of these regions were just kind of, you know, places on the border like Dorset and Wiltshire, where Ofcom had put it into the west and they wanted them in the south instead.
Yeah, and it really brings it home. I mean, I know we're expecting all these stations to merge and become one, but when you read, as I did, I read probably a couple of dozen of the applications just to make sure we didn't miss anything. And looking at the Wessex one in Dorset, it said all programmes can be shared between... And here's the list: the Basingstoke licence, the Newbury licence, the Reading licence, the Alton licence, the Andover licence, the Guildford licence, the Chichester licence, the Aylesbury licence, and the Salisbury licence. And you think, oh my God, they are all radio stations operating independently, 24/7, with staff, with premises, or most of them at least. And they're just going to be wiped out with one single brand. And I know I don't want to sound like I'm moaning, but this is big stuff, isn't it? This is a big, bold move for Bauer, which they don't usually do this kind of thing. This stuff is usually reserved for Global to demolish.
Yeah, the same applies in the part of the world where I am as well. So Stray FM in Harrogate is my localist station that's coming, going to become Greatest Hits Radio. And yeah, their format now says they can share their 3 hours of local programmes a day with the whole of Yorkshire and Lincolnshire. So it's everywhere from Scarborough all the way down to Lincoln and Grimsby and places like that. So it's a big old patch.
And the people who have been in radio 50 years who really care about this are shouting at the podcast now saying, yes, this is terrible. Yet the radio execs that are listening to this now are thinking, yep, that's just what's happening. Get over it. But yeah, we need to mention it because it is a big thing.
It is a big thing. And there's been some campaigns to save these local stations, clearly with the format changes going through, which was pretty much a formality because Ofcom are just following the rules that they set a couple of years ago anyway. I presume it's pretty much the end of the road for the kind of Save Spirit FM campaign, because Bauer are not suddenly going to turn around and say, oh, all right, we'll keep that one local and not put it in the network.
I know. I mean, I know it shows that people care, but once a commercial company has made a commercial decision... within legislation, then there's no chance. It's not going to happen, sadly.
And where stations disappear and become a bit more national, a part of a homogenised brand, various new online radio stations are popping up all over the place. We keep hearing about more of these. Liverpool Live 24/7 is among them, just announced this week as well. They're going to have people like Kev Seed and Billy Butler, obviously big names in Liverpool, on. It's been tried before. Online radio in Liverpool never seems to work.
Liverpool seems to have had a dozen radio stations that, I mean, the power and presence of Radio City, even if it is networked, is just huge in Liverpool. So for an online station to try and get a share of that pie, it's just, I mean, it's an impossible task, some would say, but good luck to anybody that tries. And having Kev Seed on there, you know, we'd tune in because, you know, he's quite a legend, but do people in Liverpool really tune in because somebody that was on breakfast radio 20 years ago is on there? Is that a pull these days? I'm sure we'll find out in time.
Yeah, I mentioned Stray before as well. HG1 Radio has just started this week in Harrogate, which is an online station. Sister station to Y01 in York, which is a community radio station run by Chris Marsden. That's just launched. And there might be another little radio station coming to Yorkshire soon as well online.
I don't know what you're talking about, Stu. Tell me about a possible online radio station in Yorkshire coming on very soon.
Well, I put out shared a tweet of a radio station in my neck of the woods that I might have been involved with and planning a little bit during lockdown. So look that up.
Obviously you're too modest or you don't want to mention it, but can I say Good luck to you and Nick for Rumbold's Radio. Have I said
that
right?
Yes, you have said it right, yes. It's a very local name for local people, named after the big hills that run through our area called Rumbold's Moor. But yeah, I expect there'll be more of this sort of thing around the country. The future is digital, so new digital stations popping up, and again with ours. We're online initially, but the plan is to go on small-scale DAB when it comes along to our area.
Oh, well, good luck. I might even do one myself, you never know. We'll see where the future takes us when small-scale DAB comes along.
And what's going on in Northampton, Roy? Some news just in as we record today.
So this is interesting. Northampton will have 4 community radio stations. I don't know if there's a big list of which town has the most community radio stations, but something's going on in Northampton. And rather than me ramble about it and probably upset somebody, I think we should bring somebody in who knows what they're talking about. Maybe somebody who lives there and maybe operates a community radio station.
Yeah, let's talk to Martin Steers. Martin is a station manager at NLive, another community radio station in Northampton. He's also the co-founder of UK Community Radio Network. He's involved with the Community Radio Awards as well. Hi, Martin.
Hi there.
So this is a bit weird. Basically, there's a community radio station that's its license was going to run out, and so Ofcom said, you haven't applied in time, so we'll open it up to other applications. And they got 3, and they've said, you can all have a license. This seems odd.
I don't think anyone was expecting it. The way it was listed by Ofcom is it was initially to serve the audience of Inspiration. They didn't want that audience to lose out. So I think rightly everyone thought that this was a scrabble for one license and for ideally a beauty contest for that one, serving that one license, but with the expectation that Inspiration was going to apply as well, but it would be an open selection process. And I don't think anyone expected this result. I certainly didn't. I thought we were going to expect something interesting. I personally thought, and from what I'd heard, rumours, there might be a second licence. But the fact that all 3 have been licensed is really interesting. And yeah, I think for a population of just over 200,000, 4 community radio stations is going to be a really interesting mix.
And it all seems very quick as well, because they only advertised this in May. The closing date was then last Monday. I think the 17th or 13th, something like that, and then here we are at the 22nd and they've awarded them all already.
Well, they had to be expedient with it because Inspiration's current license I think is due to expire at the end of this week, and they wanted to try and make sure that there was a continuation for that audience, so that's why they've been so speedy. And I must admit, hats off to Ofcom for turning this around in such a time. It makes you wonder why other things like, you know, SSDAB and previous rounds of FM and license extensions and everything else can take some time. So they certainly can deliver when they need to, which is good to know.
And in terms of the state of the community radio sector, I know a lot have been struggling at the moment because of the pandemic and funding issues. On a regulatory point of view, there is obviously a massive gap for community radio, with Bauer changing everything that they're doing with local commercial radio. And Ofcom with this and with other things it's saying at the moment seems to be allowing community radio to change and do what it wants, relaxing formats or extending areas and that kind of thing.
I think there's a recognition that there is an opening up market of traditional local community focused radio, you know, particularly most recently with Bauer announced changes. And I think there's been a policy shift or some sort of change Ofcom to take the reins off community radio and enable community radio to spread its wings and take up those audiences that want passionate local radio that is delivered all about them, their area, their communities, from travel to schools to, particularly with COVID, you know, community radio has played such a vital role with local information and now with the rebuilding of local economies. So it is a great opportunity for community radio at this time to, you know, step into those gaps, really.
And Ofcom's clearly decided there is enough space for 4 community licensees in Northampton. is there enough, you know, community stuff going on to share out amongst you, and in terms of revenues as well to share out amongst you?
I think that's the big question, and that's obviously what we're going to see happen over the next, you know, 18 months, 2 years. Bearing in mind, whilst Inspiration is now continuing their license, the other 2 licensees now have, I think it's up to 2 years to launch. So yeah. I don't think they were any expectations station to be launching next week. I do wonder about the sustainability of community radio for 4 licenses in the town. And I'm open-minded to work together. I think only in collaboration can we actually make this work sustainably for all 4 of us. But interestingly, when you speak to Ofcom, under current legislation, there is no protection with FM licensing for existing CRs. There are for commercial. They have to, you know, if there was a local commercial station, they would have had to have taken that into account. But there is no consideration of the sustainability or viability of the market for community radio. Because I had this conversation exactly with Ofcom and they said, you know, that's not in their power to look at, really.
So just picking up on that, Martin, the sustainability of these stations, obviously revenue is only half the story. All 4 of you will be going for grants and community pots of money in the same town. I mean, it's hard enough when there's one station looking for community type of money, but all 4 of you going to the same place, that's going to be almost impossible, surely.
That is the real big question, absolutely. You know, it's all right when you've got stations with very clear, distinctive, different audiences, like currently with NLive and Inspiration, very 2 different audiences trying to do things differently or for different people, but with a sense of collaboration. But absolutely, you know, as somebody who's been running a station since September with NLive, I can tell you it's a real struggle to get grants in the town. There are, you know, it's not a grant-rich place. You may not know your Northampton history, but this is also a place where it's being forced to form a new unitary authority because actually the local county council effectively went bankrupt twice in the last 3 or 4 years or whatever it is. So it's an area which is going through a lot of dynamic change itself. So it will be really interesting to see what happens, but absolutely sustainability, both in terms of commercial advertising, but also in grants, I think is going to be a real key question here.
And just to pick up on what you said, either Ofcom can do things really fast if they really, really need to, or maybe somebody messed up and they said, what about Northampton? There's like, yeah, approve Northampton. And like, what, all 3? Yeah, just go for it, sod it, give them all a license.
I think Ofcom are a lot more open-minded to the power of community radio more than ever. And I think that's more the change. And we've seen that with all these license extensions and stuff like that. I think Ofcom have shifted gear and are a lot more open to having conversations about what community radio can be and should be delivering. No doubt there was a full, robust process in place. We would expect nothing less from Ofcom. But I think whereas traditionally with Ofcom, the answer might have been a no with community radio, I think the default now is a yes, if that makes sense.
It's crazy because normally it takes 9 days to get a reply on email, let alone award three different radio stations. Just for anybody listening that might want to set up a community radio station thinking, well, I want a piece of this. What where are we at the moment with applications open and different rounds and things like that, just to pick your brains?
The UK Community Radio Network had a meeting recently with Ofcom, and Ofcom reiterated the point that there will be no new FM rounds until SSDAB has at least begun to be resolved or has been resolved. They're standing by their stance that they've had for about the last couple of years, that they see SSDAB as the priority for the radio industry, but also for the community radio sector. And obviously the deadlines for that, the first couple of rounds for that start beginning in September. So it's all about SSDAB now. But for a full country approach, that will take a good couple of years.
All right. So nothing happening anytime soon then. Apart from
back to the status quo, normally, to be fair, let's be honest.
Well, thanks for coming on, Martin. Good luck with it all. And thanks for chatting to us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Another thing on community radio just to mention is that the Community Radio Fund has reopened. They gave out a load of money a couple of months ago, and there's another £73,000 for community stations to apply for. Find the details about that at radiotoday.co.uk. Roy, I know you are so excited that there isn't going to be any new Radar data for the next few months.
Yeah, the next quarter was due soon, quarter 2, so we won't be staying up all night writing about it for everybody. So we get a night off, and maybe even quarter 3 and maybe even quarter 4 we won't have any data for, but we've got that kind of information coming up later on this very podcast, no doubt.
Yes, Lindsay from Radar will be on in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, quite a changing landscape for us and our reporting. It means we don't have to do those Radar stories and make our heads hurt with all the numbers, at least for a few months. The IRN Awards 2020 have been announced. They're going to be hosted online at the end of this month, 30th of July, hosted by Kay Burley off of Sky News. And I'm looking forward to this happening next month on Radio 2. Bob and Greg is the programme. Radio 1's Greg James are going to be chatting to Bob Harris 50 years on to the week, I think, since his Radio 1 debut in August 1970.
Definitely, I'll be listening to that as well. That sounds good.
Right, I think that's all the news for now. Obviously, there's more at radiotoday.co.uk that people can look up for themselves, and we'll be back with something similar next week, I guess.
All right, is that it? Are we done?
That's it, we're done.
Oh, you didn't ask me how I was at the beginning of all this. I don't know if anybody noticed that we skipped the pleasantries this week.
Past Kerry. Are you all right? Are you well?
I'm all right. How are you? That's all you ever say, isn't it? I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah.
The usual reply.
Busy. Yeah, busy, busy. Keeping busy.
Fantastic. All right, let's move on to the next segment.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. This is the Radio Today programme, and the pandemic has brought many changes to the radio industry. We learned more details this week about how it's impacting the measurement of radio audience data. Radar has announced research is on hold, and it's looking at new options for going forward. You'll find out more about this from Lindsay Ferrigan at Radar, who's on the podcast with us this week. Lindsay, tell us first, you know, what happened when this pandemic hit?
I think everyone's aware that as of the end of March, we could no longer do face-to-face recruitment. I'm sure everyone knows in Radar, I know it's a diary system, but we do recruit people via an interview first. You know, we place 25,000 diaries a quarter, so 100,000 over the year. So as of the end of March, once we were into full lockdown, that was no longer an option. So we kind of knew that it would have to be a contingency that was COVID friendly. So we started, so we use a lot of the Radar respondents. We go back to them for the MIDAS survey. We go back to them for actually other surveys use them as well. So we started doing a tracker survey. So it's only like 1,000 panel. So we asked them if they'd be willing to fill out a diary 1 week out of the month for the next 3 months. So we've got 1,000 sample for that. I'll come to that later, what that can kind of divulge, but there's no way that a system like that was going to create, you know, enough data. We looked at maybe modelling those individuals on producing, you know, the gold standards data set, but that wasn't going to be feasible. So we knew that we'd have to think about a new method or various different ways of trying to recruit people in that time. But we knew it was never going to be an easy transition. You can't just move from one methodology to another. I saw someone tweet the other day saying, oh, you know, do you not think they could just discover that they can just Zoom interview people? Well, you can't really just drop in people Zoom and Teams unannounced, asking them to fill out, you know, be part of a survey. It doesn't really work like that. You'd have to acquire, I think, probably in upwards of 2 million email addresses per quarter to do something like that. I mean, it is feasible, but again, these things have to be in place. So when you would have to look at different ways of recruiting people to fill out either diaries, if there's ways to do that, or, you know, some form of passive measurement or something that will work in unison going forward. But I think what we've accepted is there won't really be anything until Q4. 2020 at the very, very earliest. So what I can kind of tell you is what we're looking at moving on to. Mm-hmm. So we are testing recruiting people via telephone call and online. There is another face-to-face mini test going on at the minute just to see how, you know, people would respond by interviewers tapping their doors. Actually, that was the meeting that I was just in earlier today with Ipsos, going through, you know, how people have responded to the interviewers coming to the door. Has it been positive? Has it been negative? And I think all in all, it's been positive. I think a lot of people are just desperate to talk to someone, to actually see another person. And obviously the interviewers are keen to get back to work, things like that. But it's a slow and steady process. We'll have to do more extended tests with the telephone and online recruitment to see what kind of listening that, you know, gives us. But another thing about moving, you know, instantly switching to a different way of recruiting people is it often reflects in the listening, a step change. So we know from other methodologies, electronic, for example, the reach is much higher than diary-based system, but the hours are a lot less. So there's so many things to consider, I think, to kind of quash the idea that people think, well, you can just switch from one to another is very easy. It's not, when it's the gold standard of listening, when there's a lot of money being spent and radio ad spend and things like that. So we are looking at various different ways of hopefully coming back as early as Q4 2020, but maybe Q1 2021.
So in the meantime then, what are stations going to get? Are you still putting out some new data releases?
So what will happen on release day next week, the data set that will be available to the stations is the original Q1 data with the updated populations. So every year in Q2, most surveys update the populations because ethnicities have changed. So for example, the Black ethnicity is 3% more than it was a year ago. So we have to base these, you know, on the actual UK population. So we've added those in. It won't really change the numbers at all, maybe at a very, very small micro level. But the fundamentals is that this is not listening. This is not, you know, the new data set that's coming out. It's called Q1 Revised. It's basically the data from the last quarter with the population updates. But stations will get their standard reports that they normally get. They just won't use it in, you know, a public form. I mean, they can't allude to the fact that it's an increase in listening or listeners, because it isn't. Any movements is just from the updates, not from listening, because there isn't a fresh data set on.
And obviously for smaller stations, they're reporting half-yearly or yearly figures generally anyway. So a lot of the data that's used in their figures is actually from last summer.
Yeah. So most little stations report on a yearly basis anyway. So it doesn't affect them in any way. The only stations that report on a quarterly basis are your big national brands that are available on every platform. So that's, you know, we call it a rolling sample, but the idea of a rolling sample is to stabilise, you know, any listening across that period. And, you know, small stations just wouldn't be able to publish on a quarterly or a half yearly basis. It just wouldn't be enough sample. So we allow them to do it on a 12-month basis.
And obviously the kind of older, more established stations have got a lot of data that they know in terms of their shows and what the, you know, the breakdowns to day parts. It's harder for a newer station that's just come along, that's only been in Radar a couple of quarters or is just joining Radar. So are you doing anything to help them at all?
Well, I think there's only a handful of stations that are affected. The ones that reported in Q1 will not be affected. I think what you're getting at is the stations that have come on after that are due to be reported. Obviously, any new station that's come on in this time or was due to be measured in this time, there's nothing that we can do about that. For example, maybe Times Radio. But these stations like that have their own kind of data set that, you know, they could be looking at modelling internally. But unfortunately, if they've been due to be placed with their names in the diaries as of Q2, then that's, you know, there's nothing we can unfortunately do about that.
In terms of the options then going forward, obviously the Radar board is made up of the BBC and representatives of commercial radio and the advertising industry.
Yeah.
And I know as an organisation you've got this kind of, the way that you're structured means you've got to have unanimous decisions on your board.
Oh yeah.
How easy and quickly might it be to come to a new way forward, you know, with all those different partners?
What we have before kind of board level is a technical management group level, which again, there's more representatives from the BBC, commercial radio, the IPA, and the advertisers, etc. So when it's something that directly involves the survey, those are kind of the first point of contact. Those are monthly meetings, and those people who sit on that committee will you know, go through every option first, and once the most feasible ones are ready to be decided upon, and then it will be, you know, a board decision. But yeah, you're right, it's a deadlock board, so everyone has to agree, so it has to benefit everyone. With a joint industry committee, we have to be transparent and as fair as possible for the BBC and for our commercial radio subscribers. So it's a very long, drawn out process.
And to be clear, so the options going forward that you're looking at is about how you recruit people to your surveying, not completely changing the model. I know things have been said in the past about using watches or smart devices to listen and cleverly work out what people are listening to. You're still talking about people filling in diaries.
Yeah, there's not a new sole methodology being looked at. So the tests we're doing with Ipsos are for recruitment. There is a data integration test as well, which would be a combination of kind of diary listening and passive listening. So from the Media Cell app, I don't know if you know what that is, but it has the same functionality as a watch or as a people meter or something like that. So it would be a fusion, or if that is successful, that would be like a fusion or a hybrid method. It wouldn't be simply from one method straight on to a different method, because what we want to do is to keep the continuity from the data, so it would be comparable. So, for example, if we're producing fresh data again in Q4 2020, then it would, we'd like it to have that continuity from Q1. Or comparable to the Q1 revised data set, rather than moving on to a whole new method. Moving on to a whole new methodology would, you know, that's a step much. We're not assuming that we'll need to do that. It will be, you know, a hybrid method or another method of recruitment to the diary. But from what we're saying, it will probably be more, you know, online based. It will just depend on what happens with being able to go to people's doors as well, because telephoning, calling people up to ask them to recruit as well, that's all fine and well when people are at home. You know, you'll have more response, there'll be a better strike rate at this current period. But what if things do change and people start going to work? It's, you know, there's so many moving parts. So yeah, not a whole new methodology as planned.
And I think the difficulty as well with people, you know, not answering their phones or telling you to clear off, as I do when I get cold, you know, I don't want to talk to you, I'm not interested in doing your research.
Yeah, I'm not even polite to them anymore. I just hang up. I don't have time for that. So, yeah, so, and plus other methods, it's hard to always target at a quota system as well, because we're looking to be representative of the UK population. It's all fine and well someone said, oh, why don't you just do these Skype interviews? But then you'd have to organise the interview to determine the quota, the age, the you know, the gender, the household size of that person, where, you know, at the door it's more effective.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to seeing what happens with it.
I've got something else to tell you as well.
Oh, go on then. What's this?
So from, as I mentioned about the panel before, you know, the 1,000 people who, over 1,000.
Yeah.
So these people that have been keeping a diary a week per month, so April, May and June, what I'm doing from this data that we've seen is I'm compiling a listening and lockdown report. So essentially it might not be called that yet, but that's just the working title. So I'm also, contributors are also BBC Compass Data, Global's kind of internal tracker, Bower's kind of internal tracker, just so for corroboration. But from the tracker, you know, we can see some trends of how listening was maybe different at the very, very beginning of lockdown and how it is now. So I'm just putting that together. And I didn't want to obviously put it out in the week of release to cause confusion. I'm kind of set for a first week in August release. So I'm just kind of working through that now. So as much as, you know, it's not the, you know, the listening data, the comparable data, it does give us insight into, you know, what has been happening during this period of time.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Hill on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, Mike from Radio Player, was talking about their own internal figures, and they've seen some, certainly, as you say, at the start of the lockdown, there was about a 50% increase, he said, in reach to radio via listening through Radio Player.
I mean, I think, and we know from our stakeholders that they've seen their online stats go way, way up in the beginning, because people are at home. You know, listening by location is very, very different. So that's part of the report story as well, about how, you know, because people were at home, you know, how they were listening then. And now, as people ease back to work, you know, the location, more people listening, driving and traveling now, where, you know, they weren't at all at the beginning. So, yeah, we saw those similar patterns.
Just on the online listening, obviously, you know, your data encompasses the platforms that people listen to in normal radar time. So, I mean, some people might say, well, why can't you just use that online data and then build up the other listening around it? But I suppose, A, that's not your data and you're relying on the validity of it from third parties. And B, it would then perhaps exclude some audiences who never listen online that you wouldn't be able to represent their listening.
Yeah, we have to be as representative as possible. That's another thing with, if you think about streaming data, that's why we don't use it currently in part of Radar, because a lot of it, when they fill out the diary, we ask them which platform they listen to. So do they listen online, which would quantify as via your smartphone or a voice-activated speaker, any of that. But the streaming stats, we've never really incorporated that in at this point, because it can be a lot higher, because you don't know how many people are behind the stream as well, how many people are. And it's never really been a method in Radar, because, again, you can't determine the person who is listening, you know, the demographic of the person who is listening. The thing about using third-party data was we wouldn't be able to, you know, verify it. And then who do you choose, which, you know, who do you choose? Is it, oh, well, Radio Player has this and the BBC has it. It would have to be like it would have to be something that was put together as one whole thing. And that, you know, that becomes difficult.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing these Q1 revised figures next week, and then your listening in lockdown report.
It'll be pretty similar to Q1. It'll just be, you know, some popular. As I say, any kind of micro movements within it are not from listening, and I think everyone is very aware of that, hopefully.
And we'll look forward as well to something perhaps later in the year about how you're going to move forward with it all as well.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll have an announcement about that once all the tests are done. But as I say, we don't do anything in a hurry at Radar. I can only apologise for that.
Nice to talk to you, Lindsay. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much, Stuart. Thank you.
That's Lindsay Ferrigan from Radar talking to me here on the Radio Today programme. And just ahead of David Lloyd, a reminder that you might want to check out a product called CleanFeed if you are doing broadcasting from different places to normal as things start to resume after the lockdown. It's great for outside broadcasts if you can do any of those at the moment. It's great for doing interviews with guests, co-hosting shows from different places, getting yourself on the air from home. It's been designed for radio people and for podcasters as well. It's really simple to use, and the quality is great, all just using your browser. CleanFeed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll take 30 seconds or so to get signed up, and you'll be doing your first live interview or recording or getting on the air within minutes. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
David Lloyd's
Radio Moment.
When it comes to benchmark features, there's one that ruled. Shops, offices, hairdressers, building sites all came to a halt as this tune rang out across the nation each morning.
It's an hour tune which will warm your heart, and the story is from Moira Holt, who lives in Rickmansworth in Herts, where the electricity comes from. And her story begins as follows. When she was a mere 13 years old, wearing her school uniform, she had a Saturday job, and all the staff were nice, but there was one fella who was rather special.
The number of letters per week to our tune was just phenomenal. I mean, what's a pile this big? I mean, we're talking about, you know, 200 letters a week of different stories coming in. It's a very fine process picking out the letters, because obviously it's rife for people taking the mic. You know, people would actually flick fake tears onto them to make them look real.
He'd wander around the studio and embroider it so the stories go, you know. Why not? You know, it's theatre. But one thing about our tune is that a great brand, and he kept on doing it. Just plugged away at it, you know, and he's still getting employed to do it on cable shows.
It's just lovely to be able to look back. I just have good memories, really, of listening to Simon Bates. We love you.
Our tune, delivered by Simon Bates, which began this week 40 years ago. The first song chosen, by the way, was Honey by Bobby Goldsborough.
And I surprised her with a puppy.
The backing track for Simon for those Daily Tales, of course, was the theme from Romeo and Juliet. But the feature evolved over time, and I gather the early voiceover track was this. Happy 40th anniversary to Our Tune. Some of the greats in radio are fired from time to time, and this week, famously, 50 years ago, it happened to Kenny.
Finally, Mrs. Mary Payton, wife of the Transport Minister, has passed her advanced driver's test first time. She's been driving more than 30 years, but says she was spurred on to take the test by her husband's appointment.
She only passed because she crammed a fiver in his hand. I know these people.
Well, about 2 days later, I got a telephone from the third floor of Broadcasting House saying, "Well, Kenny, it's time for the parting of the ways." Poor little Kenny, fired by the giant, and I sat on the end of the bed with my wife, Lee, and she patted me on the head, and I looked all dejected and sorry for myself, and all these fabulous pictures hit the front page the next day, and there was nothing happening in the world, nothing, nobody got shot, nothing, so I got the front pages of everything. BBC, BBC, sacks little Kenny, ah.
The driving debacle, seen as the catalyst to Kenny's sacking, but as Johnny Beerling, the controller of Radio 1 at the time, always explains, wasn't quite as simple as that, really. Kenny Everett, of course, turned up later, very shortly afterwards, on BBC Local Radio, thanks to buccaneering local radio managers who ignored the wishes of their bosses.
They're putting me on Radio Bristol for 4 hours at £12.10 an hour.
Do you feel bitter about this, you know, the demise, your last demise from Radio 1? Do you still feel sorry about that? And if you do, don't you feel, you know, that you've been in some way browbeaten into coming back because this is the only outlet in radio in this country, the corporation?
I don't feel strange about my dismissal. It got a hell of a lot of publicity. I've never been in the Daily Mirror more in my life. Now, I look upon Radio Bristol as a cuddly little radio station that I'll be able to groove on.
Radio Bristol is the sexiest station in the West.
Kenny Everett on Radio Bristol. He did, of course, make his way back to network radio eventually. Here's a cutting, actually, from 1971, which is headlined, BBC Forgives Ken. And it says, disc jockey Kenny Everett, sacked from Radio 1, is being given another chance by the BBC. Mr. Everett, 28, will be heard in Richard Baker's Start the Week on Radio 4. The BBC said last night,
they're virtually self-contained 10-minute programmes with a comedy element. Kenny's recording them in his own studio. If his offerings work out, there could be more programmes for him.
There we are. The ever-prescient BBC. In 1978, just about every industry was hit by industrial action, including radio.
This is LBC 261 medium wave and 97.3 VHF. Owing to an industrial dispute, normal services on both LBC and Independent Radio News have been suspended for the time being. We hope to resume our regular programming as soon as possible.
Hello, this is Dickie Arbiter bringing you the good news that the industrial dispute at LBC is now over and that there'll be an IRN news bulletin every hour on the hour from midnight tonight.
We anoraks love those days, the chance to hear station jingles in full. Industrial action at LBC and IRN this week, 42 years ago. 1969 now, and who's this turning up at Radio 1?
A pretty potent pop package. A sendation never ending. If I wanted to go mad, I'd describe it as tautromosophical, but I won't do that. I'll merely say that it is an incredible new record. If you listen to the words, it's lovely, and it's back to the old birds with a chestnut met. Oh, yeah, I will have a cup of coffee. Yes, please, I would like a cup of coffee, yes. A little bit of milk, please. You sure that's not pale ale? Oh, let's have a request. Why not? For Janice Colson and
Noel Edmonds, who initially worked in the Sound Trails department and later filled in on Radio 1 before getting a regular show and then breakfast. So with the Today programme messing things up 16 years ago...
Watching the anniversary unfold was our parliamentary correspondent, Robert Orchard.
First class, galley flight attendant and our purser's been stabbed. And we can't get a good copy.
Attitude.
That was the wrong tape. Stand on. That wasn't Robert Orchard.
So, what are we going to try and get Robert Orchard? Let's see. This is exciting. No Robert Orchard.
Sing a song.
Right, well, in that case, we can't go...
The first Radio 1 Roadshow, 47 years ago. The birth of the Sonovox effect, 81 years ago. Radio North Sea closing amidst jamming 50 years ago.
No free Western country has ever jammed a free broadcasting station, even in times of war.
And the death of Marconi, 83 years ago.
Fin dal 1895.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David Lloyd, and to Roy Martin, of course, as usual. And to our guests this week, Martin Steers from NLive and Lindsay Ferrigan from Raja. Join us next week for something similar, but probably a bit different.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.